Welcome back to the Film Experience. I'm Nathaniel, and I'm here with Nick Davis.
Flying, you know, we're a dynamic duo today. I'm Robin.
Does that mean I have to speak with a gravelly voice?
Well, it means I have to get, like, fired after one movie, so we're even.
And Batman and Robin is such a great lead-in to talk about the Cannes Film Festival. So apropos.
It's perfect. It is perfect.
So we're going to spend this podcast wishing we were in the south of France. For starters, I wanted to ask how excited you were about the jury this year, led by Jane Campion.
I feel like I should be more excited. Like, you want to have all their babies, right?
Yeah.
Is that what I remember? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So whose babies do you most want to have?
I mean, take your pick. Like,
or just like a polyamorous, like,
yeah.
Who even knows?
Yeah. Not Willem Dafoe, no. But I think I could handle the rest of them.
All right.
You know, just to reiterate, for those who haven't been paying attention, Jane Campion is the president of the jury. And on her team this year is Gael Garcia Bernal, Sofia Coppola, Leila Hatami from A Separation, Jean Dujon from Secret Sunshine and The Housemaid. I love her. I can never pronounce his name. Gia Zanka from China.
Zhang Zanka
from China. And who else? Nicholas Winding Refn of Drive fame. And Carol Bouquet from France.
I don't even know how a baby with Nicholas Winding Refn would turn out. Like, who knows what it would be, or if it would be one-eyed and a Viking. I don't know.
Well, his concept of family and only God forgives does not bode well.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. Your baby might be ripped out of you before you even have it. That's too bad.
So anyway, but I do think it's worth noting that people get very excited, including me, about the jury each year, but there's a lot to be said for just because you know someone's work, it doesn't mean you know that they're aesthetic for what they enjoy.
For sure.
Because, for example, I never think of Quentin Tarantino as a political figure.
Yeah.
And yet his jury went with Fahrenheit 9/11.
Although my favorite thing about that is that the jurors were all pretty overt, even, like, the day after the festival, about being like, yeah, Tilda pretty much took that over. She's like, you can have Old Boy as the runner-up, but we're not doing that for the top prize. And by the way, also, if you get Old Boy for second place, I get Tropical Malady for third. Are we all cool here? Like, somebody else on the jury, I forget, I don't think it was Kathleen Turner, who was uncharacteristically quiet, but someone else on the jury referred to her as the prime minister, and Quentin was the
queen,
the monarch, the figurehead. Yeah. And it wasn't clear that he was super happy about it, but, you know,
interesting.
Hey, what are you going to do? But yeah, like that year that David Lynch picked The Pianist, and
right.
I think they often seem to, I wonder sometimes if artists like use this as a, well, I don't know if they use it as this, but like,
there's more, you know, we to me than have, what, like, you think of me.
Yeah, or like, you know, I would never in a million years be able to make this, which is why it impresses me, or who can say.
Well, and even when someone chooses something that people are, you know, they try to place within their aesthetic, it often feels very forced, like when Tim Burton's jury went with Uncle Boonmi.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people who were like, oh, it's just like this odd thing with Supernatural. You know, like, and it's just, I'm sorry, yeah. They're nothing like each other as filmmakers.
Yeah, totally.
So anyway, so we don't know at all what they might be interested in, this jury.
Yeah.
But I was wondering if you could illuminate for the listeners, because you're far more well-versed in Cannes than I am. Why and how the different sections break down, because it can be very confusing when you hear about the buzz. What's the difference between Un Certain Regard and special screenings and competition? Like, there's all these different programs within the festival.
And I think it's super, super opaque. And, like, unlike Berlin, which has a real pride invested in often giving donation competition. That's an interesting slip.
that often giving competition slots to either brand new filmmakers or people like Claudia Llosa or kind of not easy to embrace sort of difficult filmmakers. Khan is pretty open about the fact that they like to invite major auteurs that we've all heard of and give them competition slots over and over and over again, which is how you wind up with things like Broken Embraces in the competition. And often the movies that leave with the best reviews are in either in Certain Regard or the Director's Fortnight, which technically isn't even part of Khan, even though it runs simultaneously and is obviously orchestrated with it. So I don't even understand what it means to say that it's a separate entity, but like if you go to the Khan page, it won't have any information about those films. And I think it was started in the late 60s when Khan canceled itself for a year. So whatever. But yeah, people bitch all the time about how, you know, a lot of fascinating stuff that should win a lot of awards if you were just going on the quality of the movie doesn't ever end up there.
And now, how would you describe, for people who didn't understand, what's the difference between Un Certain Regard and the competition? Like, why are those two things? Because they're both very official.
They're both very official, and Un Certain Regard is sort of... because it's so variable and it seems so kind of ambiguously political, it's hard to say for sure, but some people see it as kind of like a warm-up bench to really interesting talent or something that might be not as, you know, press conference friendly, but it's a newer filmmaker or a more challenging style. But then it's always confusing when you get people like, I think Bruno Dumont, who's won the Grand Jury Prize twice, is now there, and people like Jessica Hausner, who has been a festival presence for a long time, and we know how Khan always gets a deservedly bad rap for gender inequities, but they just keep not promoting her. So occasionally it can just feel like people who should be in the competition but didn't pay enough money or aren't friends enough with the director or the programmer. They occasionally, you see a documentary. I can't remember a year except for 2004 that had two documentaries in competition, but even like The Missing Picture last year by Wright Dupont, who'd been in competition before, that shows up almost always in Un Certain Regard if you're working in nonfiction. And then there's the Critics Week, which is even more sort of off the map or challenging or unusual styles, which I think actually is programmed by critics, and that's considered part of the official competition also. And Director's Fortnight, for whatever reason, just isn't.
And can you, I'm like totally like using you as the encyclopedia of Cannes today, but also for the jury that decides on the Camera d'Or for first, first film, how they pull from all of these lineups, right?
They pull from all the lineups, and I'm not sure if they pull from Director's Fortnight or not because of its ambiguous status as being part of the festival or not. I guess they must, because Ilo Ilo won last year, and that was in the Director's Fortnight. So again, it's all weirdly permeable, but they have flagged for them. I think you can be a first or second feature. Maybe it's just first. Somebody in the comments will know if we don't know. But, yeah, so they just watch all of those.
Okay. Yeah, so the president of that jury this year is Nicole Garcia, an actress-director. So they're so both of the juries are led by women this year.
Yeah, which, yeah, feels like kind of a funny, like, well, we got two in competition, but look at all the women on the jury! How about those ladies? Maybe Lena Wertmüller was just busy or something, but...
Yeah, one of the films competing for the Camera d'Or that I'm just invested in just because I've seen it is Eleanor Rigby, which those who haven't been following, they've recut the disappearance of Eleanor Rigby Parts 1 and Part 2, which were both full-length motion pictures when I saw them in Toronto last September. Now it's a two-hour film just called Eleanor Rigby.
I heard it was close to three. Is it just two now?
God. According to Cannes, it's 1 hour and 59 minutes.
Holy shit. Okay.
Yeah. So they've left a lot on the cutting room floor. So whether or not that's the final cut of the movie, who the hell knows?
Yeah.
But I did.
Thanks, Harvey.
But I did really like the movie, even though, you know, I'm not fond of very long movies. But I will say that even though I really enjoyed it and I thought all the actors were really good, I did feel like there was a lot of, not padding so much as extraneous stuff that felt like, do you want this to be like a miniseries or do you really want to focus on this marriage, you know?
Yeah.
So well, I think technically I think it could be a really great film at 2 hours, so we'll see how it's divvied up.
Yeah. I think I read in that Vogue cover story with Jessica Chastain like in December. Did you read that article?
I did not, no.
So the guy who directed it was like her first, she went to a film festival like right when she got to Hollywood, and it was a totally off the map sort of festival, and his movie was playing in it, and she like threw herself on him and was like, I think this is so great, this is so cool. And then she lived with him for a while, like they've been best friends forever. So I kind of love this whole thing that's happened where now they have a movie together. But it sounded like originally the film was only ever going to be the James McAvoy centered part, and then as they were filming it and revising the script and stuff, they got so interested in what, you know, she'd been very opaque and sort of marginal at first, and suddenly not only did her part, it's one thing when your part gets bigger, it's another thing when they're like, let's just make a whole other movie from your perspective. So
yeah, I mean,
I guess it helps to be BFFs.
Yeah, I mean, it does. Her best friend is actually in the movie as well, and so the three of them are all like super tight as people.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Jess Weitzler, right?
Yes. So she plays her sister in the movie.
Yeah.
And
Viola Davis is in it too. Is that?
Yeah, Viola Davis is her college professor. Yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like, you know, the Monuments Men for people that we actually think would be fun to hang out with.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, that's the only one I've seen from any of the lineups.
Did you not see, you didn't see Whiplash at Sundance?
I missed Whiplash, but Whiplash is also showing in Director's Fortnight.
Yeah.
And
Cold in July, you missed that?
I missed that one too, yeah. Okay. It's so funny at festivals how you can see, you know, because I saw a lot at Sundance. You could see a lot.
I know.
And then there's always something that people are like, but how did you not see this? And they're like, well, there are hundreds of movies.
Yeah, well, and sometimes you have a sense of what you'll probably be able to see at another one.
Like, right. Anything else that you're really excited about that we haven't mentioned? Before we go into the competition films?
I guess from the outside ones, well, you and I share a love of Ronit Elkabetz from Late Marriage, and she co-directed a drama about how still, I think, is it right to obtain it? Somebody in the comments will know. I'll just use that as my mantra. That to obtain a divorce in Israel is still, you have to pass through sort of a religious mechanism to do that. It's not just a state or civic decision. So she made a movie about a woman who's you know, bearing up through the whole process of getting separated from her partner. And so I'm curious to see that.
Yeah.
She's such an awesome actress.
Yeah, that's so funny that you mentioned that, because that was just the one I was going to talk about next.
Oh, no, sorry.
No, that's fine, because that's all I was going to say about it, too. But I really like her, so I'm curious about that one. Yeah. The Princess Kaguya from Studio Ghibli. So a lot of people will be excited about that one. That's also in Director's Fortnite.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that on my little best animated feature chart because G Kids will be releasing it in the States.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's not directed by Hayao Miyazaki, of course, since he technically made his last movie, but it is from Studio Ghibli.
And the Celine Sciamma, who made Tomboy, that I can't remember. We both loved that, I think, right?
I didn't see that, but I've heard only good things about it, yeah.
Yeah, oh, okay. It's really, really super. And I still haven't seen Water Lilies, which is a favorite of a lot of my students. So, you know, whatever. That she was somebody who I think people kind of had their fingers crossed might show up in competition. I guess not yet.
And her new movie is called Girlhood.
Right. So you can do a boyhood girlhood double feature eventually right. when they both wash up on these shores. But I don't know how excited to be about the Ryan Gosling feature. Like those first time director things can really be mixed.
Yes, they can. And that, I don't know. I mean, it's a big pet peeve of mine. I shouldn't keep harping on it, but I really don't understand the impetus behind changing unique titles to generic titles. Like, it was called How to Catch a Monster before, which is not hugely specific, but it still, you know, makes you think of something. Rather, Lost River kind of sounds kind of, I don't know, it could be anything, you know?
Yeah.
I'm really not sure what that's about, but it's obviously a thing. Maybe they've done market testing, and the more generic the title, the more interested people are. I don't know. But that happens to a lot of movies, and it really makes me crazy.
I know I'm more interested, but I can't remember. Is it Frozen River, or Turn the River, or Bend in the River?
Let's quickly go over the competition list, because that's the ones that people will be talking about. Now, the opening film is not in competition, but that's Grace of Monaco, which is...
It's not even clear if it's in distribution.
Yeah, so that I think a lot depends on how it's received, you know, whether or not we get a chance to see it, and in what form we get a chance to see it, because Olivier Dahan and Harvey Weinstein are still fighting over the final cut.
Yeah.
And that's, of course, the Nicole Kidman as Grace Kelly movie.
And Harvey has threatened to drop it even before it screens.
I assume these are all, like, bluffs, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I assume it's a bad movie, and this is the best way to get publicity and make people interested in it, is my guess. Partially because I just watched my one and only... Mm-hmm. No, wait, wrong. My Own Love Song. Who can keep these Renee Zellweger titles straight? So, did you ever watch that?
I did not, no. I knew it was safe to avoid.
Yeah. Well, it's almost not safe to avoid because it's so deliciously what the fuck is happening. Like, Forrest Whitaker as the mentally addled best friend, Renee Zellweger is the Bob Dylan singing, tattooed country artist who does like a 6-minute rendition of This Land Is Your Land as kind of unedited reciting. And then there's like animated birds, whatever. So I'm not super confident about Grace of Monaco. And I can see why, you know, definitely the best way to market My Own Love Song to me was to make me feel like it might be terrible. And that seemed to be working for Grace of Monaco.
Well, the cast is... I don't know. The cast is interesting to me. Not just Nicole Kidman. Yeah. So, we'll see. So, anyway. But the competitive slate, we have Clouds of Sils Maria. From Olivier Assayas, who is just an amazing, amazing director. And that stars Juliette Binoche as an actress. So that one I'm very excited for.
Even though it has two of your enemies?
Yes, even though two of my enemies are in it, Chloe Moretz and Kristen Stewart. But you have to get funding. You have to get funding.
Could you single out a favorite Olivier Assayas if you had to?
A toss-up for me between Demon Lover and Irma Vep. Both of which I think are incredible and very rewatchable to get a handle on what he's doing. So, I mean, I love Summer Hours too. So it's very, you know, he's just great.
Yeah.
So that's one to look forward to.
I would have the same tie. So we could do that thing at restaurants where you order the two dishes and just share them both.
Okay. And so is Summer Hours also your runner up to your tie?
Maybe. I liked Carlos a lot, too, but maybe Summer Hours a little bit more. That's true. And I feel like now there's another one that I'm forgetting. No, Clean. I love Clean, the Maggie Cheung one.
See, but that one I wasn't crazy about.
Yeah, I thought I remembered that.
I thought it was too dry for me. Like, I wanted it to have some sort of blood, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then we have Bertrand Bonello's Saint Laurent. I do not know a lot about Bonello.
So I'm a little worried about that. Just it's an Yves Saint Laurent biopic, I think. Mm-hmm. And he did House of Tolerance a couple years ago, which I think came out here finally as House of Pleasures. Mm-hmm. And that's the only one of his that I've seen. Mm-hmm. We all know my capacity to not complete my projects, but I will say nonetheless that I have been watching movies by most of these directors, especially when I haven't heard of them before. Uh-huh. And I want to watch his movie Tiresia, which was in competition in 2003, but haven't gotten to it yet.
Mm-hmm. Then we have Nuri Bilge Ceylan's Winter Sleep. And of course, this is the director of Distant and Once Upon a Time in Anatolia, so a very acclaimed Turkish director. And he likes to make super long movies, and this one's no exception. So this is over 3 hours, and with the sure to keep you awake title of Winter Sleep.
Yeah. With an extra help from Thierry Frémaux when he was at the press conference announcing the competition slate, and he said, "Don't worry, we'll program it early in the festival so you have time to recover."
That's a vote of confidence for you.
Yeah, and yet, like, it's kind of the movie that, I mean, it seems a little silly to me that there's, like, odds makers about this stuff.
Right.
And we haven't, you know, but a lot of people do kind of have their eye on him since he's won the Grand Jury Prize and the Best Director Prize so many times and never actually won. Looks like a front runner. I don't know. I have yet to be 1,000% sold on one of his movies, although I liked Anatolia a lot.
Mm-hmm. And then we have David Cronenberg's Maps to the Stars, which is, of course, a Hollywood satire of sorts with Julianne Moore and Mia Wasikowska.
And don't leave out John Cusack. I can't wait to be...
What's with the renaissance of his career?
I don't understand it, but I was happier when we didn't deal with him all that much. I'm having a hard time getting excited about the movie in general, despite so many, it should seem like, five-star hooks to peaks. I mean, Julianne Moore meets David Cronenberg, I should be camping out, but I'm just not that interested.
Yeah, it seems like the trailer didn't completely sell me, but of course I love the topic, and you know, it has some actors I'm interested in, and it's Cronenberg, so I'm sure I will see it. Then we have the Dardenne Brothers, 2 Days, 1 Night, starring Marianne Cotillard. And that is another socioeconomic drama. She's trying to convince her coworkers to give her their vacation time or something to pay her. Something like that.
Okay.
So she's going to lose her job or lose her house or something. So it's, you know, it's sure to be also an upper, like Winter Sleep.
And where's your Cotillard sort of temperature reading right now? Like, how behind her are you at this point?
For me, it goes film to film with her. I thought she was just great in Rust and Bone. I was super into her in that. But I'm all over the place with her from movie to movie, so I can't really tell you.
Yeah, which can be exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. But I know you're a fan.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about the Dardenne brothers in general?
You know, I don't, like, leave votive offerings at their shrine, which a lot of people seem to do, but I like them a lot. I didn't really get The Son, but I liked Lorna's Silence, which I think is the one that people got least excited about.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I especially liked that one, and I liked Rosetta and L'Enfant a lot, but I tend not to remember their movies very well. Even I've seen Rosetta twice, and L'Enfant, I guess, once, and The Son twice, and I could not tell you a whole lot about what happens in them.
You realize, Nick, though, by saying that your favorite is the one that people don't really like, that you're a bad critic, according to the study going around the net.
I'm just trying to, you know, play by the rules of the internet and be a jackass. Which
I think you have to be with consensus to be a valid voice.
That's right. That's true. Disagreement is so lame.
And then we have Xavier Dolan finally making the competition slate. He's graduated with his new film, Mommy. And since it's a new year, it's a new film. He does one every year, so he's going to be... And since he's so young, he's going to have the biggest filmography of all time.
It's true. Although, you must be a little nervous to see him working at, like, 2.5 hour scale again.
Yeah, I wish he would pare it down, because I really like his movies, but I... And not just because of my thing with long movies. I just really always feel like, edit, you know? Because even the beautiful parts of his movies, I was just like, did you need that shot or this? Did you need it to go on that long?
Yeah.
But I do really like his movies, so I'm excited for that one.
I still, you know, Tom at the Farm still has not reared its head around these parts, so the dream is alive.
That's probably my favorite by him now.
Yeah.
So then we have Adam Egoyan's Captives, which I haven't heard anything about, but he has not had a good run lately.
No, I would say not. Yeah, I was looking at all these films in competition, I feel like it's like the last one I would probably get in line for. Like, you know, I'd still happily see it, but he has not given us a whole lot of reasons to stay excited the last decade or so.
Mm-hmm. Jean-Luc Godard, because it's Cannes, he's there with Goodbye to Language.
Which is apparently in 3D.
3D, and it's the shortest film in competition.
Yeah.
At just 70 minutes.
And let's assume the most inscrutable.
I think that's a safe assumption.
Yeah.
And then we have Michel Hazanavicius from The Art of the Artist fame, Oscar winning for The Artist. Mm-hmm. He's remade the 1948 film The Search, which once starred Montgomery Clift. And now it's going to star Bernice Bejo. They've gender-flipped the story and also modernized it. It's not about the same war.
Yeah.
And Annette Bening is also in it, but I'm not sure in which capacity, because I believe the movie's in French.
Oh, right. Well, have you seen the Montgomery Clift version?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, remember I'm assuming that she's the sort of international aid worker.
Probably, yeah.
That Aileen McMahon was, which would allow her to not be in French if necessary.
Yeah. But since, there's no... Since they've changed a lot about it, it's not... I'm not sure it's really a strict remake.
Fair enough, yeah.
That we don't really know who's going to be doing what in that movie. I've heard it's in French, but that could be inaccurate as well.
Yeah.
Since it's an international type of story.
Yep.
And Tommy Lee Jones, his second directorial feature, The Holmes Man. And I can't remember if Three Burials, which was his debut, did that do Cannes?
It did, and he won Best Actor for it, and it won the script also.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it played on the absolute last day when people usually start signing off, and the jury flipped for it.
Okay. He's got The Holmes Man, and that's the one with Hilary Swank, and with himself and Hilary Swank, and they are transporting insane women across the plains. So
it's like a pitch that we wrote.
Right? It does sound very interesting. I have not read the book, but I understand that author is, his books tend to transfer well to cinema, is what I've heard. So I'm excited about that one, despite Hilary Swank in the lead role.
I just watched, as part of this project, I watched The Sunset Limited, which was his other directorial, it was for HBO. It was just him and Samuel L. Jackson in a room, and Cormac McCarthy wrote it.
Okay.
I'd never heard of it. And that's pretty interesting. I mean, you know, it gets a little old to, when you make a movie about two people in a room, you know, already written your own reviews that are like, it's so amazing that we feel like we are so dynamically involved, even though it's just two people in one room. Like, yeah, totally. That's got it. But as a Cormac McCarthy story, it certainly, I liked it better than The Counselor. I didn't love the movie, but it's, some people really seem to.
Mm-hmm.
So
what's it called?
That's on Amazon. It's called The Sunset Limited.
I hadn't
and
even heard
Tommy
of
Tommy Jones is he's a philosophy professor who's just tried to kill himself by throwing himself on the New York subway tracks, and Samuel L. Jackson pulled him off and has now forced him back to his apartment to explain himself.
Oh, okay.
And then they started talking.
Okay, so then we have Naomi Kawase's Still the Water, which I don't know anything about.
The only... So she won the Grand Jury Prize in 2007, the year that No Country for Old Men won nothing, and Persepolis, K- came in third behind her. And the jury, which had like Toni Collette and Stephen Frears and Maggie Cheung that year, were pretty overt about saying that they wanted to get behind movies that they thought needed these prizes to guarantee release. And still, that one never showed up in the U.S. But I got a DVD from Japan, and I really loved it. She's mostly a documentary filmmaker who started turning to features, I guess, like 10 years ago. So I liked The Morning Forest a lot, and I gather that Hanezu, which she had in competition 3 years ago, did not light anybody's world on fire. Guy Lodge even said he's astonished they would invite her back. So maybe he really hated it, but I'm hopeful. She was on the jury last year, I think, too. Okay. So she may just be a friend of the festival.
All right, then we have Mike Lee, The Return of Mike Lee with Mr. Turner, and that's a biopic of a famous painter, and Timothy Spall is playing the painter, but it has its usual array of very fine actors in all of the parts, but who knows whose part is what size, because it's a Mike Lee movie.
Who keeps saying it's his passion project and the thing he's been building to his whole life, and who can say?
Well, the last time he did a biopic was Topsy Turvy, which was quite wonderful. So,
yeah.
If you have to hand somebody a biopic, might as well be Mike Lee, because he really does get inside his characters.
Although I'm tempted to say at this point, I wish it weren't Timothy Spall. Like, post Secrets and Lies, I was really excited about that guy, and I feel like I've seen him give like 16 bad performances since then.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of his either, so we'll see. We'll see. But I love Mike Lee, so that's definitely on the radar. Ken Loach's Jimmy's Hall is the next one. I haven't heard anything about that one.
I think he just officially broke the record for the most number of times in competition, so he's, you know, it's almost become a punchline at this point, but I don't know anything about it either.
Because he has never won, right?
He won for Wind That Shakes the Barley.
Oh, right, okay.
Which a little bit felt like winning in the year where nobody could quite get it together to be excited about anything else. But and The Angel's Share came in third a couple of years ago behind Amour.
Okay, and then we have Bennett Miller's Foxcatcher, which is, of course, will be a semi-big deal stateside, at least. Everybody knows about that one. And I don't even know how to pronounce Alice Rohrwacher. The Wonders.
Yeah. Or the Marvel, I think they were calling. I think they're probably still deciding what they're going to call it. But she had a movie, I think this is her second feature, and she had one a couple years ago on the festival circuit called Corpo Celeste, about young girl, Catholic Church.
I remember reading about that one,
I liked it. And I don't think it ever really came... Well, I guess it did eventually come out at, like, the Quad for 5 minutes or something. But.
Then we have Timbuktu. I'm not familiar with this director, though.
His kind of biggest splash was called Bamako in 2007 is when it played in the U.S. It was, putting an entire nation on jury trial. He sometimes makes his movies through Mali and Mauritania, and goes back and forth. The money's always through France, but I liked it. It was pretty dogmatic. Danny Glover put a lot of money into that too, I think.
And where is he from?
I think his parents are from Mali, but he grew up in Mauritania, or else it's the opposite. But West Africa, in any case.
Okay. And Nick, you, I have to say, you are more knowledgeable about African film than most film critics I know. It's sort of like a area of cinema that feels very underexplored, actually. Or at least under-discussed, at least.
And under-distributed, for sure.
Yeah. And then we have Damien Zifron's Wild Tales.
So I'd never heard of him before. He's an Argentinian director, and I got his first... I don't know if it's his first movie, but the only one I could find is called The Bottom of the Sea, which is sort of a suspense movie, but also kind of a comedy about this architect who's pretty sure his girlfriend is cheating on him. And you think you might be, as he's digging into it, getting into some like horrible big money mafia conspiracy, but he's also like a super klutz and just keeps like at moments when he's about to like frame this person who seems like a criminal, just drops a bunch of things or trips or lights the wrong car on fire. And so it's a weird combination of like punchlines and farce and tension, and I kind of got into it
of his previous film.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So I don't know anything about this one, but that was the only thing I could find to learn about this director.
Well, this one is apparently a comedy as well, or with comic elements, and since it's Argentinian, it is legally contractually obligated to star Ricardo Darín.
Obviously. Yeah. Yeah,
so he is the star. And also Dario Grandinetti from Talk to Her is in it.
Yay.
Okay, and then we have the final film in competition, Leviathan. And I don't even dare pronounce that Russian name.
Did you see Elena? It was his last movie.
No,
a couple years ago, or The Return.
Which I was saw his The first Return, one. Yeah, which was very good.
And you liked that, right?
Yeah, it was very good. Yeah.
So this one is
Zvyagintsev,
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all the summaries of it, they're like a version of the history of the world retold through three subplots. Oh, so I think that it's setting itself up to be the Tree of Life-y,
okay,
you know, big giant. Who knows what it is? But
yeah, the official synopsis. I have my hopes up. Yeah, the official synopsis says mythological scale. So there you go. Concerning the human condition on Earth. So yeah.
The first official photo that they released was just of the sun coming up from behind the Earth. Like, all right, there, cosmos, yes. But I really love his movies. I even just watched The Banishment, which was the one that won Best Actor at Cannes a few years ago and then never got released. And I understand why it's the one people like the least, but I think he's still a really good filmmaker. So I kind of have my fingers crossed for it, and unless it's totally ponderous and impenetrable, I kind of think it might be a front runner. I don't know. Who can say?
Or even not if it to is turn ponderous and impenetrable, it could still be a front runner. Would you? Do you want to take reader questions?
Yeah.
This is a great one from Robert Hamer. Which member of Cannes royalty would you most like to keep out of future competition lineups? It's a little bitchy question.
I love Robert Hamer. Hi, Robert Hamer. Gosh.
I mean, it is the same directors very, very often. Like you were saying, it's very much
over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you get the Zvyagintsev, it was a big scandal that Elena wasn't in competition when it got better reviews than almost everything. So you sometimes get the Cinderella Man nomination and now he gets to be in. But yeah, sometimes it's wrong movie, whatever. So I guess the safe answer is Ken Loach, but I might risk picking a fight with you or Adam McGoyan, I guess. But I'm kind of hoping Pedro Almodovar stays out of it for a while. Like, he seemed like kind of an automatic ad lately, and I just don't get where his career is going lately. And I sort of want him to just disappear for a while and come up with something pretty different than whatever he's been on lately.
Yeah. I mean, my thing, because I, you know, believe in fresh blood in the cinema, is that I really kind of wish that maybe one year they wouldn't grandfather anyone in and totally. And so not necessarily like pinpointing anyone, but just be like, let's really surprise everyone and let's just have a really eclectic mix of directors.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping some programmer gets, a little frisky one of these years and decides, you know what? I'm going to risk pissing off all my friends.
That is kind of a benefit of the Chicago Festival, that just because of when it falls during the year, they have to scramble a little bit to get as much con as they can, and they do really well, but most of the festival seems like it's Berlin driven a lot. And again, Berlin's the one that really does stick to its guns that way. So, I get it that I don't always see as many great movies as you see when you look at the con lineup, but it is more surprising for sure.
And then a question from Teo Bugby, another bitchy question. What do you propose the recommended spiritual cleanse should be in the case of Hilary Swank winning Best Actress?
I love Teo Bugbee too. These are like great people. I'm not too worried about her winning Best Actress, but I don't know. Like, I also, I don't know. I kind of like her.
There you go again, being like a bad critic off consensus.
I know. I mean, I liked her in Conviction. I don't really understand where she's been the last, like, it's been like 4 years now, right? Like, I'm kind of hoping that she'll turn it around a little bit in this. But I'd be surprised.
I don't know.
What are you going to do? Well, the question's clearly for you.
I would just, maybe a triple feature of Juliette Binoche. In anything.
Yeah.
But I do think it's really fun. I do think it's really funny that every year when it comes to who might win the acting prizes at Cannes,
yeah,
every year people assume the Best Actress is going to a major star. Every year.
Every year.
And it it rarely does.
Totally.
And or even if it goes to somebody who has a name, it's not for a film you would expect, like Bérénice Bejo winning.
Right.
So I think it's kind of, like you were saying, you know, odds makers for the Palme d'Or. I think it's very similar with the acting. It's like, who the hell knows? But if I had to put money down just for the sake of something fun, I might go with the actress from Xavier Dolan's Mommy.
Oh, Suzanne Clément, or is that who it is again? Or is it Anne Dorval again? I know he's working with both of them.
Well, yeah, let me see who...
I'm pretty sure they're both in it. I don't know. I feel a little bit bad for Marion Cotillard that she's been that kind of blindly chosen frontrunner a few times now, like for Rust and Bone and for The Immigrant. And it seems on paper, like by the same logic, she should be in pretty good standing here since there are not a lot of women-driven movies in this competition. Mm-hmm. But as you say, it's never a safe bet. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, people. I'm assuming people are going to think that it's going to be Cotillard or Binoche.
Yeah.
But you know, it's Cannes and it's the acting, and who knows?
Yeah, maybe it'll be Ryan Reynolds. I mean, who can say?
Or maybe they'll really like surprise us by giving Bérénice Bejo Best Actor this time, since she's playing the Monte Clift role in the
Search. There you go. There was something 2 years ago where the jury, I think, for Enceinte and Regard just decided, like, they refused to give actor and actress because all the women in all the movies they watched were better, and so they just gave two Best Actress prizes and told the men to go fuck themselves, and of course I was bouncing off the walls. Like, what could be better than that?
That's awesome. Okay, so what do you think, this question is from Paul, what do you think is the most undeserving film that ever won the Palme d'Or?
I think it was probably The Mission, which also has a whole pretty well-documented history of seeming like the producers told them, you can have the world premiere as long as you promise us the Palme.
Wow.
And some of the jury members and festival brass have obviously been quick to say we would never make such a deal, and some of the jury members subsequently, when they used to talk a lot more freely, I think Sidney Pollack was pretty candid about, yeah, they sure did ask us a whole lot how much we liked The Mission. They really liked to ask us that. But then he was apparently one of the jurors that swung it to The Mission. So I think The Mission's pretty terrible, even though it's pretty sometimes.
Yeah.
So that, or like The Knack. Mm-hmm. I think A Man and a Woman's pretty lame. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Do you have a...
I haven't... Have a like, we're, you know, to be disclosed later, we have a little Cannes special thing coming up, but I don't really want to talk about it on the podcast.
Right.
So I have been looking at the films that have won, and I'm realizing, though, I've seen more of them than I thought I had for the Palme d'Or mm-hmm. winners. There's a lot I still haven't seen. Of the ones that I have seen and I'm very familiar with, weirdly, the one I'm not crazy about, even though I really like it as a movie, are actually two. I'm sorry, let me rephrase. Three by directors I really like that I don't really like that movie that much.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't like I don't like Barton Fink, the Coen brothers. I just think it's too sealed off. It just feels a lot more inauthentic, even in terms of their style, than their other films. I don't know why, but I just something about it bothers me. I'm not crazy about David Lynch's Wild at Heart, even though I love the performances in it. But as a movie, I think it's one of Lynch's weaker efforts.
Me too.
And weirdly, even though I really, really love Robert Altman, MASH is down quite far down my list of favorite Robert Altmans.
Oh, interesting.
So those would be some right off the top of my head that I was just like, I'm not sure I really get that. And yeah. Actually, The White Ribbon by Michael Haneke is way down my list of Haneke movies as well.
Me too. That was a hilarious year of Isabelle Huppert being the jury president and be like, well, I guess you kind of can predict how it's going to go sometimes.
Yeah. Anyway, so those were the questions. One question from Joey, I think we've already discussed. If the jury lineup ever makes us think about the films in competition differently in terms of their reception. But I do think I think everybody thinks that every year, but it doesn't really affect the way the films are perceived once they arrive. That's all about critics. I mean, Cannes is such a critic-mandated festival in terms of how movies are received, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And I think 2004 was the first year because of the whole Fahrenheit 9/11 situation where the jury gave a press conference about their choices, mm-hmm. which I think is maintained as a tradition since then. Mm-hmm. Although now it seems like the festival doesn't really want them to say anything.
Right.
Just like sit there and state banalities. But it used to be kind of interesting when you'd hear about movies that they were just completely split over. Like mm-hmm. Sleeping Beauty, I think, had that problem. And so that sometimes makes me think about the jurors differently, if not about the movies. But I like mm-hmm. getting a sense of which ones were consensus and which ones really polarized people.
Yeah.
I think about Sally Field differently, and I always will, thinking of her as like throwing herself on the table for Do the Right Thing and screaming at people for not being willing to give it the palm. Like, that's a Sally Field I thought I had not met yet in 1989, but suddenly there she was. Wow.
Yeah, right. I mean, I feel like Sally Field, we don't know her as much as we think we know her.
I think that's right.
When I saw her on Broadway, also in The Goat or Who is Sylvia, the Edward Albee play, she was, I saw both casts. I saw the replacement cast and the original cast, and because I thought the play was spectacular. She was so damn good in that show, and it was such a difficult part, and like not a safe part at all.
I think she might be tough as nails.
Yeah, it was this angry wife whose husband, you know, falls in love with an animal. So it was
happened to all of us.
And she was just like, I had seen Mercedes Rule, who originated it, who was great also, but like, I just was shocked that Sally Field had that part in her. So I feel like even though she's so familiar, she surprises.
Yeah. I realize we didn't call attention to the new movie by the Animal Kingdom guy, David Michaud, which I'm really excited about. It's called The Rover.
It took him a long time for a follow-up.
Yeah. I'm pretty psyched about that. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty psyched about Jane Campion on red carpets for 2 weeks. Like, what else does my web browser want? Nothing. I want that. So maybe I'll just have all the babies with her and you can have the other eight.
I'm just hoping that this gets Jeanne Doyen more parts, because I don't understand why she isn't in a movie every single year that gets released in every country and, you know, becomes a 100 million blockbuster.
Or even when, like, Secret of Sunshine took 3 years to open here, what was that about?
Right, yeah. And it opened, it was so weird because it opened like 2 weeks before The Housemaid, which was, you know, got to theaters fairly quickly. And then just like nothing stateside from her. But then, you know, it's sort of like you just sort of deal with it because foreign stars and foreign cinema, it's a crapshoot in America. Whether or not we actually get the movies. Even on DVD, we don't always, you know, get the movies.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that's my big hope. I hope we get to eventually see most of these movies.
Yes. Although you are pretty Cannes fanatic. You make an effort. All these stories and projects from previous years.
Well, it helps a lot to have the... this is where I call in the resources of teaching at a college, because the interlibrary loan system makes it possible to see things that are on DVD, but only in, like, European pressings or whatever. But, yeah, I really do like it.
Yeah, so you can go back and pretend you were a member of those, all of those starry juries of yore.
Yeah, and I figure out, you know, I just project who would have been on my side.
Right. So who besides Tilda Swinton did you have, like, the most fun conversation with on the juries from years past?
Oh, gosh, I've just gotten along with everybody, you know. I feel like I'm a uniter and not a divider, much like our former president. Robin Wright Penn and I sure had some fun. You know, we managed to bury the hatchet. That was good.
My favorite jury ever, I really think we've already discussed them, is just, I just love the idea of sitting in a room with Quentin Tarantino, Tilda Swinton, and Kathleen Turner.
Yeah.
That was 10 years ago, but that jury just made me crazy. I love it.
I like the idea of Kathleen Turner being terrified to talk. Like, when you can intimidate Kathleen Turner, something awesome is happening.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to our Cannes broadcasts. We will have a woman on the town for the first time. So Diana's going to be attending the festival.
Exciting.
Writing it up. So I'm going to, you know, sort of give her my must-see list that she must report on. Hopefully she'll make those movies. That's all the time we have this week. Hope you enjoyed this look at the upcoming Cannes Film Festival. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great week.